Welcome to the PDL's official podcast, hosted by me, the commissioner and the owner of the Delco Dreamers, Tommy Yu, and...
I'm Darren from the Carolina Thunder. It's time to sit back, relax, and get ready for us to get off topic as possible.
All right, guys, welcome to another episode, and we are continuing on with this year. Darren, we're halfway there. I feel like this time it's just taking a little bit longer because we took a little break, and we had some things in between, but we are officially halfway there. How does it feel?
No, it's sort of a relief in a way, because I know that, like, these definitely don't get as many listens as the other ones, and some teams that don't even listen to the pod at all, like, we're kind of just doing it for ourselves in a way, because we know that, like, some people are like, yeah, you know, I don't really give a shit what they say, which is fair, because what do we know, really, you know?
It's kind of like a good primer for us because it gives us an opportunity to look at all the teams. Exactly, because we know players have changed, see if these owners maybe changed their strategies and things like that. So it definitely works as like a refresher primer for us. But you're absolutely right. There's absolutely no reason why Brett could be listening to this, but he probably will because he's awesome. But with that being said, this one should be a little bit more focused because as we jump at the top of the show, we always talk about, you know, NFL news, PDL trades, things like that. So let's just jump right in because for once, it looks like the PDL is outpacing the NFL, at least when it comes to news, because two very, very minor trades have gone down. And Darren, you were a part of both of them. So why don't you tell me what happened?
So I was looking to consolidate a little bit.
It's like spring cleaning.
Yes, exactly. I had a little bit too many picks. Not that I didn't want it, like especially the 302. I was really trying to keep it.
You didn't let me have that.
I've done more mocks than I am proud to say. And as of today, like I think that there's going to be pretty good players available around that range. I mean, of course, they still have to get like landing spots and stuff like that. And like, as we were talking on the last pod, like there's all kinds of landing spots where we're like, oh, that's terrible. So like, if that does happen, like maybe the 302 turns into like the 212 or whatever. But like, I still think that like there's going to be talented prospects because even if they get a bad landing spot, they're still good players, you know? So I really wanted to try and keep the 302, but then that would have meant that I would have had a cut another player that I wanted to keep. So you know how I have a hard time letting go. So,
man, it's times like this where sometimes I'm like, man, if we were just co-owners of each other's teams, we bring out the best in us. And I know sometimes we always have that chat off air. We're like, man, if I was your co-owner, these are the unsolicited advice. And then you do the same for me. And then we just don't listen to each other anyway, even though we both kind of know the other is right. But we're like, fuck it. I don't care.
I'm not doing it.
Exactly. It looks like pretty much spring cleaning for you. You kind of saw the NFL draft coming up and you're probably thinking, man, I need to consolidate these. I don't have enough roster spots. Even when I have to make the real cuts, I do have to eventually. Sorry, Darren. I know that time is going to come, but you're probably still thinking, well, I still need to figure something out. So that's kind of what you're able to do. But before we continue, actually, Darren, was this one of our first trades ever that we have done?
I think this was
outside of fab like stuff. I know we do that all the time.
I think this was our very first legitimate trade in the PDL. And I know it wasn't like a big one, but I sent 307 from this draft to you for Jeff's 2025 third, which I'm expecting to be like 306, 305 maybe. So that is not meant to be a slight at Jeff, but I'm thinking it's going to be in like the same range between 305 and 307. Like it's going to be about the same pick next year. So I was like, yeah, I'll do it. Because and then that which got the ball rolling, because I think when Greg saw that, he had the idea to send the next trade that I made earlier today. I got Brett's third in 2025, which is I think we can all assume is the 301, and Steve's third from Greg for 302 and 401 in this draft. So I was like, you know, I was trying to keep that 302, like I said, but I thought it was a little bit too much good of a value. Although if I did hold until the draft, I might've been able to get a little bit more, as we saw from Steve holding the draft hostage last year until he got value he thought was appropriate. I probably could have done the same thing, but I was like, yeah, I'll do it now. I think this is fine.
Yeah, I think it's one to want to consolidate your picks, but I know in a lot of the scenarios that we come up with, to have an actual trade situation, you need a trade partner, right? I feel like that's one equation, one part of the
Yeah,
equation a lot of
true.
people kind of forget. Like in all these mock drafts, oh yeah, the Cardinals should trade down and blah 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 blah. But then you have to find the right
Yeah,
trade
tell me with
partner that
who.
wants to do it. Yeah, with who? What are they gonna give up for what they want? Like it has like anyone can say, I want to do X, Y, and Z. So to see you actually do it, but then also get the value that you want is definitely exciting to see. Once again, these aren't big trades, but of course, being the PDL number one coverage podcast and really the only podcast, we have to talk about all trades and all that have to get fair value. But like I said, these two, I mean, they could be absolute non-factors, but if we really want to get the yarn strings out and really get like conspiracy theory to the wall or balls to the wall, sorry. Yeah, maybe we should follow every single pick and be like, well, who won, who lost? We're definitely not going to do
Yeah.
that. But yeah, it's just definitely going to be fun because as the PDL draft draws closer, or should I say NFL draft draws closer, that's when it's going to be a lot of fun. As you know, this is kind of my MO, right? I trade away all my picks, and then as the draft comes up, then I slowly get interested and try to buy my way back in. And that's kind of what I'm doing this time. I know they're just late third. I think I have 306 and 307 now, or something like that, or 307, 308.
You have 307 and 309.
Oh, gotcha. There we go. I knew they were just somewhat close. And I was like, all right, yeah, like back half of the third, still might be able to get some of the players that I like here. And that's kind of the difficult part when you only have a few picks that are really late. When you do mocks, you're like, I don't even know what I can use as a reference. Because as we know, the PDL draft gets wild early, right? And so I'm just
It
like, I
does.
just have to get my guy, even if it feels like a quote unquote reach. I don't care as long as like I'm not gonna pass on a guy I like just, you know, in between a pick if they go. I'm like, God damn it, I really regret that now kind of thing. So that's kind of how I'm laying the land. I know you even said, hey, you're probably gonna trade these picks to even try to you know, up even higher. That's definitely in the realm of possibility. But as you know, Darren, trading up to the like you know, the really prestige picks, the first and second rounders, that is nearly impossible, especially when the PDL NFL draft gets closer and closer. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I think so. And I think right now, everyone has the idea, especially the top eight in this specific draft. I think everyone has the idea in their head that like these are all going to be like can't miss prospects. So I think trading in the top eight is basically impossible. Like, I don't think that any of the top eight picks are going to be moved this year unless they are moved within the top eight, if that makes sense. So, you know,
Gotcha. Like
seven
a
and
six trading for a
six.
four or something like that, and
Yeah,
then
yeah.
having some backloaded picks with that, but never like someone who's outside of the eight somehow being able to trade in.
Yeah, like if the 10th or 11th pick is traded somehow, like there has to be a pretty good player on the other end of the 10th or 11th pick to get into the top eight, I think. Because I just think that like the way that they're being valued is like they're 100% superstars, no matter what. I think that the three wide receivers that are going to be taken in the top eight, I think that they're definitely going to be good. I would be more confident saying that the top three wide receivers are going to be good than any of the other players selected in that top eight, including the quarterbacks and Brock Bowers. I just think that quarterbacks and tight ends are just like harder to predict than wide receivers, but the wide receivers are just such good prospects that if any of those three guys are bad, I would be pretty surprised.
It's definitely a lot of fun to be in a position, especially if your quarterback room locked up. I think that's kind of the privilege that you have, especially in a super flex rookie draft when you kind of have that room a little bit more secured, because then you just hope that quarterback needed teams ahead of you take them to kind of push these skill position players lower and lower. And then you kind of have your pick of the litter. I know this situation has happened a couple of times in the PDL draft, but I am really excited to kind of see how this starts to shape our draft. I know we will have an upcoming mock draft episode that where we kind of dive in and really try to think where the owners want based on team needs. And then we also kind of have one on like, all right, here it's also the BPA. And then we really kind of get a little bit wild on how we release on how we think that's going to go. But like I said, as the draft date gets even closer, it's going to be really exciting because we have already seen some moves in the NFL that actually impact. Like, has there been a year really where this much news right before the NFL draft that might dictate a their like it might change the team's board. have occurred. And what I am referencing is the Bills trading Stephon Diggs away. You would obviously think that changes up their board a little bit heading into the draft, right? Outside of like maybe just straight up the Titans trading AJ Brown on draft night, I feel like typically leading up to the draft, it's usually like a dead period. I know we talk about this every single year, being like, oh man, we really gotta pump out these podcast episodes, and there aren't many things to talk about just because everyone's just kind of buckled down and waiting. But this year, I feel like it's kind of been popping all over the place really randomly.
Yeah, I think that the last, for me in memory at least, is the year when Tyreek Hill was traded. But that happened way sooner. Like, that was in the beginning of the offseason, not, like, a couple weeks away from the draft. So I think that, like, it's different, like, timing. And although I do think that there was a very good chance that the Bills were going to take a wide receiver anyway, I think now this makes it more of a chance that they have, like, a Julio Jones situation where, if you remember, like, 15 years ago, the Falcons traded up from, like, 25 or whatever it was to the top six to take Julio Jones. Now, I think that the Bills, before the Stephon Diggs trade, I don't think they were a candidate to do that. But now I think that there's a chance that they might trade into the top 10 to get like an Adunze or Neighbors, or I mean, maybe there's a chance, I guess, it's Marvin Harrison, but I think that's the least likely of the three.
Yeah, I feel like it's definitely going to be fun to monitor, and that's why it's so fun to kind of follow the different storylines that really make up the draft. That's really what makes it so much fun. But with all that out of the way, Darren, is there actually anything to talk about NFL related? I don't think there is, right?
More and more keeps coming out about
Rashee Rice. I think at one point they misquoted how much marijuana was found in his car and stuff like that. Regardless, we're still solely found. The reason we're not really talking about that much is it still seems really, really foggy, right? All we know right now is he caused like an accident on the highway. There's video footage that came out with it, and now his lawyer said he was also driving the car. That's all that has officially, I guess, been reported. There was some marijuana in his car as well. The amount has been conflicting, but it's not a felony charge, as someone once reported a couple days ago in Texas. It's not that amount. They got the, like, I think they said pounds and grams differently or something crazy like that. But regardless, that's why we haven't reported, because we kind of just want to wait. But I guess just for a little bit of speculation here, Darren, what do you think eventually will end up with a Rashee Rice case? And I'm not talking legally. I'm talking about more punishment-wise from the NFL, because we have seen the NFL usually wanting to wait until the legal system finishes. But regardless of the outcome, they kind of usually do their own independent thing. But more realistically, I think what they do is just kind of do damage control, right? They kind of see afterwards, like, all right, well, how bad would it look if we did X, Y, and Z, and then kind of weigh those options and then probably do another internal investigation? That's just me speculating. But Darren, what are your thoughts? What do you think is actually going to happen?
I think he's going to get suspended. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be very long. Like, I think he'll get at least
a couple games.
Yeah, sort of. I think it could be this season too, because they kind of know what happened. They know
there's footage already.
Yeah, what are they waiting? They don't have to wait until it plays out, because they know what he did at this point. Like, it could be this season. And if they really want to wait, it could be next season, I guess. But I think if he gets through this season and he's not suspended, then I think he's probably off the hook, because I don't think that they're going to suspend him next year for this, because they already know what happened. So yeah. To me, like, what are they waiting for?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think we would bet. Yeah, both definitely agree that Rashee Rice is not the type of player that can take some time off right now. He's the type of player that was seen as kind of like a project, right? A little bit raw, a little bit limited in his route tree. And despite that, he was still able to perform very well for the Chiefs, but everyone was kind of hoping for him to take that next step, you know, really refining route running, understand the different types of plays being called in, so he doesn't have to think as much and just play. And that's when he's at his best. So if there is some type of punishment that comes down the line, that will definitely hinder his development, or at least I would think. But do you think this is going to play a factor at all with kind of what the Chiefs are planning to do this draft? I know a lot of people have been connecting wide receiver to them even previously with before any of this has happened. And they also signed Marquise Hollywood Brown. But with all of that being said, do you think this has any hindrance to it? Kind of obviously not the same thing, but it kind of reminds me of that Tyreek Hill incident before when things were kind of getting really hairy there. They didn't know what was going to happen. So then that was kind of the whole Mecole Hardman thing. But yeah, sorry, I cut you off there.
I doubt it. I mean, being that their coach is Andy Reid, and we know how he react to players with like baggage. He doesn't really seem to care very much. So I think that they won't
Mike
really
back,
change
Mike
their plans.
Vick in immediately after Joe's like, yeah, we need that.
Yeah. Andy Reid is like the kind of guy where he's like, yeah, it's okay. Like I'll look past those flaws.
How
that you
fast
have.
Can he run on the field? All right. Yeah, he has a role on this team.
He's good. Yep. Let's sign him up. Is he extremely stupid? That's fine. I don't care.
It's actually kind of wild because it's not just the whole Vic thing, but he also had T.O. at one point. Like, you think he would have learned, but he's like, nah, this is fine. Like, I love personality.
Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah, I don't care about that. Come on. Does he play football well? Sure.
But with that being said, don't worry, Mike. We are finally jumping into your team breakdown. The Southern Oregon Smoke. It's always been a team that I feel like is loved by like Keep Trey Cut and has a lot of superstars, but when it comes to the actual season, they somewhat disappoint. I was kind of the same story with your team. Sorry, Darren, I don't mean to draw that parallel, but I think it's fair to say you both kind of had that same stigma, but then you ended up winning the whole thing. Something very similar could also happen with Mike this upcoming year. Don't want to kind of throw any kind of spoilers with our upcoming preseason rankings that we're eventually probably going to be discussing. But with all of that being said, would you say that's kind of fair? I know that's going to get Mike upset.
Yeah, I mean, literally 2 years ago, we had almost the exact same season. We were back-to-back in picks. We were fourth and fifth in the picks. I kind of broke out of the mold. Obviously, I won the league. I think Mike is – yeah, I had to. But Mike, he is right there. Like, if he nails this draft, I think he is within range of winning the title. He might have been a year behind me. But I think that we are both in that kind of same mold of we thought we were going to be good, like not this past season, but the season before that. We both thought that we were going to be better than we were. We both kind of fell on our faces. And I think Mike had like a little bit more of a reassessment time than I did. I think probably because I bought a couple of veterans than Mike didn't. Like I bought Debo and I got DeAndre Swift. Like I brought in older guys that helped me win
a bunch
the title.
Of quarterbacks.
Yeah, the quarterbacks too, Matt Stafford. But I think that Mike hates veterans even more than I do. So I think that maybe it's the time to look at him. But I mean, we'll talk about it later, but I don't even think he really needs to actually. Like I think his team is good enough where he can stay on the same trend. It took him a little longer than me, obviously, because he didn't go for the older guys, but I think it worked out okay.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. We're going to assess his different positional group rooms right now, and I think we'll both come to the same conclusion. But hey, let's see if the listeners get there with us. So let's jump right into it. What does his quarterback room look like here?
So he has Josh Allen, the QB1, and he has Will Levis. Would you mention the guy at the bottom there?
I don't think so, only because they're not really starting on a team. So right now, we'll just keep that blank. I think that's only fair. So Josh Allen, Will Levis. Those are the two headliners right now. Obviously, we kind of know what's going on with Josh Allen. Obviously, he does lose Stephon Diggs, but people aren't getting overly concerned because the back half of last year when Diggs really wasn't doing anything, Josh Allen was still putting up great numbers. And with this move, even if they bring in another high-profile wide receiver, whether that be through a rookie or, you know, maybe even trading for like a T. Higgins or something crazy like that, it looks like Josh Allen's still going to have to rely on his legs. Not that anyone was taking that away from him, but every single year you keep hearing the GM and head coach being like, oh man, I really hope he takes care of himself. Josh Allen is just a competitor at the end of the day. So now if you kind of really make him literally feel like he has to play hero ball, even in the past when he didn't really need to, but he still opted into it, I feel like now he's kind of in that position where he kind of forcing this guy to, and he's entering his prime and whatnot. So I feel like fantasy football points wise, I think really shouldn't be that different, which kind of feels weird to say, because normally if a quarterback loses someone of like a high profile, like a Stephon Diggs, you would normally point arrows down. But what is your assessment on the whole Josh Allen situation?
So to me, because of how he plays and because of what they think they want him to do to run less and everything like that, if he doesn't run less, do you think that there is a Cam Newton situation who I think is like a comparable player to him? Like, do you think after a while the hits just take their toll and then he's pretty much done at like, you know, 32?
It's an interesting question that you bring up, because at first I'm like, no, I don't think so. Like, I like, as much as I love Cam Newton, and I was definitely one of his biggest fans, you know me, Derek, I think we had him on our dynasty team. I had him in a lot of redraft leagues as growing up and stuff like that. He was like my hero. But Josh Allen definitely brings an extra dimension through the air that Cam Newton didn't. I know as like a, I was going to say freshman, but as a rookie, Cam Newton had that like record of like what, throwing for like 4,000 yards or something crazy as a rookie. But when I see Josh Allen, it's like another level. But the reason I'm not like arguing it is because all it takes is really is one injury, right? Like just one weird shoulder injury and it's all over. It doesn't have to be like, oh, well, you know, he never really had issues. All it literally takes is just one awkward shoulder injury that he doesn't really fully come back from. And then from there, it's kind of lingering. People are questioning it. And then before you know it, he's 33, 34, and he just can't go anymore. So I think it's a really fair point that you bring up. I think the only defense I could have with Josh Allen right now is the fact that he was able to remain durable, but obviously that was when he was younger as well, right? So the thought is the more tread you put on the tires, the older that you get, the more fragile you might become. But now we're just baseless speculation. So I feel like Josh Allen has proven a lot for his durability, but I feel like there are also a lot of times in seasons past where like, well, he was obviously hurt. That's why his numbers were down. I feel like playing while you're hurt and not really giving fantasy points is almost just as bad as being hurt now, right? Because now you can't bench him. You have to start him, and he might only get you. And remember, this is Josh Allen we're talking about. He might only get you like 15 to 17 points, which is not a lot, because you're expecting 23 plus points from Josh Allen, because he's freaking Josh Allen, the QB1 essentially, or at least in striking distance of QB1 for like the past like 4 or 5 years essentially. So this is just a long-winded way of saying I feel like there's not much to be worried about, but the Buffalo is definitely aware of the situation, so definitely try to surround him with talent is at least the thought. So we'll definitely see what happens there, but I think the more important discussion has to be with Will Levis, right? The Tennessee Titans has done a phenomenal job at least surrounding a young quarterback with almost everything that they can ask for. So what is some of your takeaways with Will Levis and the Tennessee Titans, I guess?
We'll find out for sure if he is good this year. And if he is not, then they'll be moving on.
The shortest of short leashes, right?
I think that he has this season to figure it out. And if he does not, they are going to be picking another quarterback next year or bringing in a veteran. And
this is not the right example, because draft capital is different, play expectations all different. But so it reminds me of like the Howell situation, right? Washington was like, yeah, we'll give you a whole year. We'll assess how you do that entire year, and then we'll make a decision. Obviously, they decide to go the other way. But Will Levis's situation, the difference, though, is they're doing the same thing, right? They're like, we'll give you one full year. We're going to assess it. But we're also going to surround you with enough things that you should be successful kind of thing. Whereas with Howell, you could make the same excuse saying, hey, he had Terry McLaurin, he had Dotson, he should have had enough. But at least in this situation, the GM almost went out of his way, be like, all right, I'm just going to surround you so there can't be any excuses. And if you don't work out, we're just going to plug in another quarterback that will appreciate what we have set up kind of thing, right?
Yeah, no, I think he does have the ability. He just needs to kind of fix his accuracy maybe. But I do think that he can do it, but it's kind of to be seen if he will, because that he kind of the same stuff he struggled with in the NFL so far, he struggled with in college as well. So it might be like something that he just can't fix.
If Will Levis is able to stay healthy and hold on to the starting job this whole year with just his play style, I would expect him to be somewhat fantasy relevant, even though after his rookie debut, his first game where he threw for like 4 touchdowns, he kind of turned into the Will Levis everyone thought he was. But if he's able to take that next step up, I mean, this is a pretty solid quarterback room. You obviously you would like to have another quarterback in there, as like a QB3 for bye weeks. Injuries definitely being another big one, because the play style of Will Levis and Josh Allen, I wouldn't say are similar, but they're definitely going to be opening themselves up to some kind of big hits. But those are definitely going to be some concerns. But I feel like the fact that you do have Josh Allen gives you such a safe floor, and he's been showing that in and out. I feel like if Will Levis is able to stay healthy, like I was mentioning, this team is going to be an issue. But that's kind of been the problem in the past with some of the inconsistent quarterback play, because players across his other positions have been explosive and been able to provide those numbers. It's just at the quarterback position, Mike, I feel like has been struggling with it a little bit, but hoping that Will Levis is going to be able to give him that foundation. So with that being said, let's jump over to the running back room there. This room looks very different from, or I shouldn't say very different, but definitely different and moving in the right direction comparatively to all the previous times we do this breakdown episodes. Because normally when we're talking about Mike Seam, it's kind of in a similar vein with you. We're like, all right, let's just skip the running back because there's no one to talk about really. And let's just only talk about the wide receiver because you both invest so much time and effort into that room. But the running back room, similar to yours, Darren, is trending upward. So what does this look like?
Devon Achane, Kenneth Walker, Najee Harris, and Tyjae Spears. I know that you like the second name, and I like the first name. So I'm wondering if you also like the first name. And I think, I know you like the fourth name, Tyjae Spears, but I think we both, neither of us like the third name, Najee Harris.
Well, I think I'm going full one. Like, I'm letting everything marinate a little bit, right? So to break this down, my quick Spark Notes version of everything, Devon Achane is going to be so exciting because we've already seen the small sample size he's provided, but the numbers are just, I don't even know if I could put up those type of numbers on Madden. It's unbelievable what he was able to do with the amount of touches, but more importantly, just on a points per game basis when he was able to stay healthy. But obviously, I'm not bringing up any concerns that you guys don't already know. His size, durability, those are definitely issues to worry about. But as a fantasy owner, that's something you can kind of prepare for, right? Like, if he's hurt, you're obviously not going to start him. Yes, it hurts not being able to start him, but he won't get you just straight up zero. So the feeling that when he is active and healthy, that you feel like he could drop someone who could drop anywhere from, like, what, like 11 to, like, 35 to 40 points, like, that's kind of incredible. Kenneth Walker, I don't really have to talk about him too much because I am a huge, huge fan of him already, and I'm going to be somewhat excited to kind of see what Seattle is going to be able to do, at least offensively. I know they just hired a defensive head coach, but regardless, I'm going to kind of hope that they have, you know, I'm not saying high-powered offense, but an offense that could at least keeps the chain going, and that's what the running backs really need. Najee Harris, I think, with Arthur Smith is going to be great. I think that he's definitely going to get opportunity. I know Najee Harris kind of does the same thing, right? He kind of just like plods throughout the whole beginning of the season, and the second part of the season, he kind of, I wouldn't even say he turns it on. He just doesn't look as bad. So my hypothesis is Najee Harris just plays exactly the same just throughout the whole football season, but when everyone else gets tired, he just looks better because he still kind of just plays exactly the same. But with that being said, you know, the Steelers are loyal to their players almost to a fault. And Najee Harris, I feel like, is a great fit for the type of style that they want to do. And I think with Arthur Smith, there only helps them. So obviously, it's not going to be 100% Najee Harris anymore. And it wasn't like that last season either. But I still feel like in a fantasy perspective, you should definitely hope for at least one more good season. Tyjae Spears, as much as we like him, he's like the same role and type of player as Tony Pollard, and they just paid Pollard. So I don't know. I feel like out of those four, Tyjae Spears is obviously the one that you have the most concern over. But yeah, those are just my Spark Notes, Darren. Now you just dive in.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree with everything you said there. I think that of the bunch, Kenneth Walker is his best running back, just because he has the best combination of ability and role. And durability, which is important as a running back. Achane, he's electric, but I don't know if he can hold up to it. And I know that they were kind of giving him like 16-ish touches when he would play last year, but he didn't really hold up. So I don't know if maybe they cut that back and they bring in somebody else to go along with Raheem Mostert, because they could draft a guy like Jalen Wright or like Marshawn Lloyd or somebody like that.
What a great fit for them too, by the way, right?
Yeah. So I think that it's possible, like, because Jalen Wright's like a comparable player to like a Raheem Mostert. So I think that like go younger there, have somebody that can be like the heir apparent, but like always split carries with Achane because he can't hold up in the NFL the way that he did in college. Najee, I agree. He's boring, but his conditioning seems to be pretty good. And then Tyjae Spears, I never really liked because I thought he was a guy that was like, he had literally no ACL coming into the NFL. So I was like, he kind of has a short
pretty
time
much
frame.
Just took him off your board. You're like, no way.
Yeah. Because he was like coming into the NFL as Jay Ajayi, who, as Jay Ajayi was in the NFL, he barely had an ACL. And then once he was in the NFL, his ACL was gone. So I was like, all right, he's coming into the NFL with knees like Jay Ajayi, which is not a good sign. So I was like, he's got like 4 or 5 years max. And he needs to like hit the ground running, and he was behind Derrick Henry. And then they brought in Tony Pollard. So I was like, is he ever going to like be the guy? So he just like wasn't really my guy. I mean, I do think that he can beat out Tony Pollard for the job, but Tony Pollard is not going to go away unless he gets hurt. Like, he was pretty good at the end of last season. So I do think that, like, Tajay Spears is the most worrisome guy of this group, as you said. So I agree. I think we're pretty much on the same page with all four of these guys.
But the fact that you're even able to name four running backs when talking about Erzurum, that puts a distinct advantage. No, that's huge, because there's so many teams in the PDL right now that might only have one or two guys worth even mentioning, and then the honorable mentions. But the fact that we're able to state four here, Mike is in a better position than most, which is great, because, spoiler alert, he has tons of draft capital, and this is not the draft where you want to invest in a lot of running back. Maybe it is. Who knows? Hindsight will make this sound real silly if there are a lot of running backs that work out. But regardless, he does have a lot of things to play with. But so I wanted to bring that up, because as we talk about these positional groups, it's also, you know, the listeners keep in the back of their head being like, all right, how can they address it? But with that being said, let's jump over to the wide receiver room. The pride and joy, I would imagine, of Mike.
So he has Puka, Justin Jefferson, Jalen Waddle, and George Pickens. Puka, best fourth round pick in the history of the PDL, probably ever in the history of the PDL. Let's not call it luck, but the fact that he was just sitting there at 401 was quite amazing for Mike there. I don't think that anyone expected that Puka would be sitting here as a top 10 dynasty wide receiver right now, like 6 months later, or I guess almost a full year later now.
Puka Nacua has done the impossible, really, and it was just kind of come out of absolutely nowhere, but it really started to show the type of role and type of players that Sean McVay really likes to utilize, and I don't see that diminishing whatsoever. So being able to start off a wide receiver room, and I think what you see in Mike's wide receiver room is a lot of youth, but also a lot of obviously heavy contributors. So the fact that when you put this list together, you put Puka Nacua even before Justin Jefferson, which is wild, but it just kind of shows the strength of this team. And I feel like Mike definitely has a type when it comes to wide receivers, it seems. But regardless, it is just the amount of pure points that you're able to put up. We don't really have to spend that much time on Justin Jefferson. Everyone already knows. So I guess the more important thing is shining the light on the latter too. Jalen Waddle and George Pickens. George Pickens obviously had one of the better off seasons, right? You don't have Deontay Johnson anymore. You have maybe Russell Wilson, who likes to throw deep. And hey, would you look at that? George Pickens is great at doing so. So arrows definitely pointing up there. But I guess I also definitely want to bring up Jalen Waddle as well, Darren, because, excuse me, I know how big of a fan Jalen Waddle has been. Would you say he's been living up to expectations up to this point? Because statistically, he's been doing fine. But I guess target-wise, it's kind of been going down ever since his rookie year when he essentially set some records.
Yeah, I would say he's not. I mean, he's a good, very good NFL player. But he was drafted like the sixth pick or fifth pick or something like that. Seventh pick, maybe, before Devonta Smith.
I was going to say so, before Devontae.
Yeah, like I don't think that, like, he's a very good NFL player, don't get me wrong, but he seems like he's always hurt. So I think that, like, he is a guy that, like, if he was in a contract year, which I think is next year, the Dolphins will probably re-sign him because he's, like, too good of a player to just, like, let walk out the door. But I think there is definitely something to be desired there with Jalen Waddle. Like, it's not 100% there of what they were expecting when they drafted him with the sixth or seventh pick or whatever it was.
I completely agree. I feel like, especially with what Miami wants to do, he serves a great role, but then after drafting him, they're like, all right, now let's get Tyreek. So they're still kind of trying to figure out the best way to utilize that amount of speed on that offense. But kind of like what you mentioned, it's definitely not that helpful that he is seemed to be banged up every once in a while. But I think those are the only real negative things you could say about this core, because, man, the PDL, we have to start three wide receivers, and we're talking about four really solid ones here. And I feel like just the 1-2 punch of Puka Nacua and Justin Jefferson, I mean, just that off the bat, that has to be one of the sexiest duo in the league, right?
Yeah, and he's absolutely going to be adding another one there with the 105, I'm sure of it. And it's going to be one of the
so it's
going to
be like Roma Dunze or Neighbors or something. Yes. So add that. And on top of that, we also have Waddle. Man, like, it's just an embarrassment of riches right now, but this is the way that Mike likes to build. But it makes it so easy, because when it comes to mock drafts, we can kind of be like, all right, we know exactly what Mike's going to do here. But yeah, I mean, we shined a lot of light here, because obviously we should. It's very rare to talk about a team Number six. This is the sixth team we're talking about in the breakdown episode. We're talking about a wide receiver room that looks like this. Pretty abnormal, wouldn't you say, Darren?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's probably because he started Mac Jones for most of the season last year, which is a detriment to himself. I think if he went out and got a veteran quarterback to put in there,
he had a Stafford instead of or Mac something Jones, like that, he would have done damage.
Yeah, he could have been not on the fringe of the playoffs. He would have been locked into the playoffs probably sooner than he was.
Yeah, no, I would definitely have to agree with that. So let's talk about the final room, the tight end, Darren. What does that look like?
So he has Evan Engram, and I will let you decide the honorable mentions there that I have listed. You can decide who's worth mentioning there.
I feel like all of them are worth it, right? We have big old Greg D. He's still over in Denver, right? And it doesn't look like they have a solidified tight end yet. We'll see if Sean Payton wants to actually feature him. But I feel like he's at least worth a mention because he had a little bit of a pulse even as a rookie year, which is very rare. Luke Musgrave, speaking of rookie, over on the Packers. They do have a lot of mouths to feed there, but I could definitely see a tight end emerging, especially with the play style that Jordan Love has. And last but not least, maybe this is just Penn State homer in me right there, but Mike Gesicki, definitely have to bring him up. He is now playing for the Bengals, right?
Yeah, and if he didn't sign with the Bengals, I would not have added him on there.
I was just going to say, yeah, it definitely could have been omitted. But once again, kind of same story over in Cincinnati. Usually they have much better skill position players, and they kind of fall in that range again. But Mike Gesicki is at least somewhat athletic. Well, I don't know if he still is up in this point of his career. But coming out, he was very, very athletic. So if he is still able to essentially operate as like a big slot receiver, which is when he was at his best, when he was featured that way in Miami, we should see, because even at his best, he still wasn't that good. So I could definitely see why you didn't add him in there. But the tight end market is so crazy, right? Like if Mike Gesicki is a top 10 tight end next year, you would not be surprised. I could just be like, oh yeah, he caught like 11 touchdowns. You'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense, right? I could say the same about Greg Dulcich or something. Like, oh yeah, he just emerged as a random Sean Payton Broncos guy, and he had 8 touchdowns and 875 yards, good for the number 7 tight end this year. You'd be like, okay, yeah, makes sense. So I feel like they're definitely worth a mention, but they're all kind of the same type of tight ends, at least when it comes to expectation. I know Evan Engram's been hanging on by a thread, mostly through volume through the Giants and now over getting that extension with Jacksonville, but I mean, it's still a good solid core to have, but unfortunately for Mike, tight ends are dirt cheap when it comes to the PDL, right?
Yeah, they really are. I mean, especially if they're a guy that is an older tight end. Like, what do you think, if Evan Engram was on the market right now, what would he cost? Like a 2, maybe? Like, I mean, there can't be many.
It would have to be like a late, if it was this draft, it would be like a late 2 or like, I could definitely see an owner going and be like, crazy. Hey, I have like the 303 and I'll give you a 303 and like a 4th. And then even then the guy sending over the 303 probably looking at the mock draft, be like, yeah, you know, maybe I don't want to. And that's not a detriment to Evan Engram. Obviously he is worth
it. He was the tight end 2 last year. Like,
exactly.
He was
so
really
crazy.
Good. And we're like, yeah, nobody would really want him.
But he just falls into that category of just some of those players in the PDL, which is, I wouldn't even say the PDL. I feel like dynasty leagues across the country,
exactly.
He kind of has like that ick of like the Giants, and he was supposed to come in as like a guy, and he just kind of gets it through volume. You never really see those kind of big plays that George Kittle can sometimes give you and some of these other tight ends, even though he is just as athletic, if not more than them, but it just hasn't really panned out. But that takes care of all of the rooms right now over in the Southern Oregon Smoke. Obviously, one thing to note that we do want to we'll cover that in the strengths and weaknesses. So let's jump ahead and just talk about some of this draft capital that Mike has, because much like you, Darren, he usually always has a war chest.
He has 105. We can assume that's a receiver, probably Rome Odunze, maybe Malik Nabers if he gets a little lucky. 107, 204, 205, 207, 301, and 305. Quite a little bit of war chest of draft picks there he has.
And I would say not just a lot of draft picks, but I feel like these are good draft picks to hold on to, especially. Like I would be very, very happy. Like, oh man. Like when I was looking at trying to trade into this draft, I did identify that Mike had a bunch and I was like, oh wow, he has some at like the later end of the draft that, or not later end, but like for him, that he might not mind. Like if he loses 301, 305, it might be easier to give up than if I were to go to you when you only had like one or two pretty good premium picks in the back half of the draft. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to go to you for any of your first. That just wouldn't make sense. So when I kept thinking about it, I was like, nah, like the amount I would have to try to give up for Mike just to move up, like if I was to give him like 307 for the 301, he would probably want something astronomical on top of that 307 to just drop down like six spots. So I was like, you know, if it wasn't Mike, I definitely would give him that an attempt. But regardless, having this many picks heading into the draft has to make you feel good. But before we kind of jump in, strengths, weaknesses, trade ideas, talk about some of the trades that Mike has made recently. And maybe it's my fault because I think I'm definitely the origin of it. But at one point in this illustrious podcast history, I did mention that Mike seemed trigger shy at one point. And I feel like with the transactions that we're about to say might kind of confirm that, because not many trades here to talk about recently or this whole past season, huh?
Yeah, there's very small trades and very few trades. So he sent Jahan Dotson to Greg for Jonathan Mingo and Brett's 2025 second, which should be the 201. He sent Cam Akers to Steve for 301 and Steve's 2026 fourth. And that is it.
Which is wild, because I think on this pod, we kept saying, man, like, you're so close, not just to the playoffs, but locking can make a deep run. I know we were just saying how it's unusual to have a team that we break down at number six have such a great wide receiver room, some high-end running backs, a deep tight end, like, pool, I should say, and then end up all the way down at six. I know we were kind of having it be like, oh, he just has to get a couple of moves, get some veterans, but he did not. So that definitely paints that picture and validates and confirms what we're saying, because there are really only just these two trades. So there's not really much to break down in either of them. So that's why I'm kind of going on this tangent to say, do you think he made the right move, just kind of holding pat?
Yeah, probably. Because I think that last year he would have had to pick the right veterans to win. This year, I think, like, with the way that his draft class looks, as long as he picks the right players, he should be set up very well this season. So he did have to wait a little bit longer, but I think he kind of did the right thing, sort of.
That's what I love to hear. And I definitely would have to agree with you. I think the players that he's either going to take or maybe even package and trade some of this great picks that he has, it's definitely going to be able to probably obtain players that will probably make a bigger difference in the long run rather than some of the trades that he would have done previously. So definitely being patient this is definitely going to be a fun strategy to kind of monitor. But with that being said, what are some of the strengths of this team?
I think just youth in general. Wide receiver is definitely his best group, but his whole team is young. Of all the players we mentioned, his oldest player is Evan Engram, who is 29. So,
By the sounds of this podcast, he's probably already on chopping block form.
Probably. If he could get a first for Evan Engram, he would already have been gone.
I feel like he's eyeing up Brock Bowers right now. I was like, man, imagine how sexy and young my team would be if I could just get rid of the oldest guy and replace him with arguably one of the younger guys. That would be fantastic. I would definitely have to agree with you. And I think we're both going to agree with the weakness. This is something that I was kind of mentioning as we were going through his team. We mentioned so many top-end players, but when it came to honorable mentions, we almost talked about no one, right?
Yeah, we really didn't talk about anybody at all when it came to honorable mentions, because the depth just basically is not existent. He has four really good running backs, four really good wide receivers. Tight ends, you can say one definitely good, maybe three, like, worth mentioning. Quarterbacks, you have nothing after Josh Allen and Will Levis, and we don't even sure if Will Levis is good. So he definitely needs to add depth. But he can add or address two of those three, like, with his draft picks from this class. He can say he comes out of those first five picks, like 105, 107, 204, 205, 207. He could come out of there with a wide receiver that's Romo Dunze, a quarterback that's probably going to be like JJ McCarthy, which, say what you will, it's probably not ideal. That might not be that much of an upgrade on Will Levis. But he could grab a couple running backs in the second round there with the 204, 205, grab another receiver with 207. Then his depth issue is fixed. Like, if he picks the right players in those first five picks, I think that he can address what is the most glaring hole on his team.
Absolutely. Depth 100% is that Achilles heel right now, but I don't think I could have worded it any better than how you just laid it out with the fact that he has an opportunity to really patch up all of these holes. So I'm really excited to be seeing him do this because Mike has had a lot of success through the draft and I feel like he's getting confident in it. And I feel like because of that, that's kind of probably what dictated why he kind of slow rolled it during the regular season, kind of looking at the amount of draft capital he has and now looking at how talented this draft incoming class really is, especially at receiver. I feel like that's definitely going to be great. And not just that, we have talked about, maybe not on this podcast, but other podcasts out there have definitely really highlighted the quarterbacks a lot. I mean, we haven't even talked about Michael Penix, Bo Nix. Like, these are definitely quarterbacks that will probably go in the PDL draft. Wouldn't you agree? Maybe even Spencer Rattler. And so if that's the case, that's the best case scenario, because once again, one of the arguments I was making on top of the show was the fact that more quarterbacks go in a super flex formatted draft, that means it pushes down those skill position players. So I'm sure that's going to make Mike really happy because he has an opportunity to patch up a lot. I shouldn't even say patch up. I just mean like get actual role players, get actual depth that will be, you know, a lot scarier than what he would be able to put it if he was able to sustain some type of injury to say, well, Levis, or not, I wouldn't say Evan Engram because he does have a deep tight end pool. But yeah, let's say Tajay Spears loses a certain job to Pollard, so he's already at flex status, and then Najee Harris goes down. That kind of starts putting Mike in a really, really difficult position. Same goes to just wide receivers because we have to start three, right? It's not unheard of, but let's say Jalen Waddle goes down. Starts to get a little bit foggier there. So I feel like he has that great opportunity to be able to address it with those premium picks. So definitely excited to see what he does. Do you have any nice trade ideas for good old Servas?
So I know we said earlier that you need to have a trade partner for this to happen. I don't really even know who has the 201 between the 201 and the 203. But if I was him, I would attempt to kind of move up like the 205 and the 207 to the 201 to 203 range using those thirds if possible, because I think for me that would, if you get five better chances at good players, that would help him more than having the 301 and the 305. And I know we just said that his biggest issue is depth, but if he gets five better players and better shots at better players than getting seven shots at two guys, you're kind of, and we did say that he got Puka in the fourth round, but I think once you get past the mid-ish third round, it's kind of just bordering on luck. Like a lot of things got to go your way in the end of the third, then the fourth round. So I do think that people have to fall to you. Like they're in a lot of drafts, like Puka didn't make it to the fourth round. So he kind of got lucky because some guys, like I don't really want to name any names. I think we all know the players that were drafted before they should have been drafted in last year's PDL draft. So I do think that if he can, and I'm not saying this is even possible because it's very hard to move up in the PDL draft because everyone kind of has their guys and they're like, no, I'm going to keep this. So I think if it was possible, it would be kind of cool for him to get five better shots than seven shots, just because those later two shots maybe aren't as definite. And you can't even really say that it's 201. Honestly, you could draft a better player at 301 than you could at 201 if the things break your way. Because if we did a redraft right now of the 2023 PDL draft, when is Puka going? Top two, three? Like he might be drafted ahead of Bijan at this point. I don't know, but he's gonna be drafted very, very highly. There's no way he's making it past the top five.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I love the like logic behind it. You definitely want to have more shots early on the draft because then you really get to get your guys. So that's kind of really the essence of what I'm trying to do right now. I knew I only had one third round pick. Yeah. Come on, of course, Thomas making about himself. Wow, call myself Thomas. I'm still in work mode. That's kind of where I am mentally. But regardless, like right now, I had that one third round pick. So I really try to see if I could try somewhat trade up, right? And then that's when you experienced the same thing I did, where I was like, wow, that's almost nearly impossible without having to give up like a lot of value. And so I try to pivot the other way, be like, all right, what if I could just throw more shots. And in this way, I could either package the two-thirds and move up to a better third or maybe a late second, maybe attach something that way. And so I think my trade idea for Mike is just trust the process. It's gotten you this far. Yes. You're sitting in great, great position. So if you don't want to trade up, you already have your guys planned out on who you want, just stick with it. Don't listen to us. But if you are falling in love with certain prospects and you're like, you know what? This would put my team in a much better position. Don't let, oh, like a negotiation with an owner be like, oh, but I want that third, and that be the reason you don't do it, right? So it's kind of really saying both Darren's argument, but also exactly what you're doing. Don't listen to us dummies. Even if one of us have won the league, shout out to you, Darren, again. But honestly, just keep going what you're doing because you have your team built in such a special way. And I know it hasn't really proven in the regular season, but I really do think we could see a Darren type of bounce back, like a Carolina like story, right? History loves to repeat itself. And you guys are mirrored and parallel so much. And then your team took that monumental step to the point where you're kind of in a huge tier, almost in your own. And so I know we talk about it off air all the time. We're like, I keep saying, I think it could be Mike. I think Mike is in that tier already, even without spending these draft picks. But then I catch myself saying, well, if you don't really have depth, I can't really do that. But he has an opportunity to do so. But these depth picks might even turn into superstars. And that's what gets you kind of really, really excited. So that's kind of our breakdown of the Southern Oregon Smoke. I feel like it's been a team that's been, you know, the electricity's in the air. All the fans are getting so excited, but it's very Chargers-esque, right? Like, it always looks so good on paper, but when the season starts and the whistle blows, something happens and it doesn't go according to plan. But I'm really hoping this upcoming season could be one where hopefully it does go according to plan. And Darren, I think you would have to agree. It's definitely trending in that way, but we've been saying this a lot about Mike's team for the past 2-3 years. I feel like we're sounding like a broken record.
Yeah, he's right there. He just got to draft the right players. And I think he is being gifted the 105, and he is going to definitely have at least one very good player coming out of this draft class for him. I can write that in marker. He is going to have at least one good player.
Yeah. And so someone with a rich history of being able to get some nice hits later in the draft too, obviously the most recent example being Puka Nacua, but honestly, if we really do like a history lesson of the PDO and really dive into every single one, I bet we could probably pull one from every single draft. Same with you too, Dare. But it's not an episode about you. It's an episode about Mike. Mike, if you made it this far, congratulations. This one's actually probably a lot more on track than our other ones. So we did.
It helps when I have meetings.
Yeah. When Darren has a heart out, you can kind of tell because I usually try to adhere to that. But with that being said, guys, thanks for joining us. We are halfway there, excited to really get down to the second half because that's where it really gets a little bit more fun. So with that being said, until next time, take care, guys. All right, now that's a wrap for this episode of the PDL podcast. Thanks for tuning in, guys.
See you guys on the next one.